It is Friday, February the 3rd. This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us. Coming up, how might Iran endanger Americans?
The Iranians are capable of hurting us a great deal in Iraq. We have 6,000 soldiers in Iraq. The majority of the population in Iraq is Shia and sympathetic in one way or another to Iran.
Also ahead, Libyan migration, women wrestlers in India, plus the latest in social media trends. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. President Trump had a busy day on Thursday. Among other events, he attended the National Prayer Breakfast here in Washington, where he spoke about how he intends to move forward.
The world is in trouble, but we're going to straighten it out, okay? That's what I do. I fix things. We're going to straighten it out. Believe me, when you hear about the tough phone calls I'm having, don't worry about it. Just don't worry about it. They're tough. We have to be tough. It's time we're going to be a little tough, folks. We're taken advantage of by every nation in the world virtually. It's not going to happen anymore.
One nation with which Mr. Trump has had some issues is Iran. Trump administration says it is putting Iran on notice about National Security Advisor Michael Flynn calling Tehran's destabilizing behavior across the entire Middle East. Flynn referenced Iran's January 29th ballistic missile test and an attack by what he called Iran-backed Houthi rebels on a Saudi frigate that killed two sailors.
The recent ballistic missile launch is also in defiance of UN Security Council Resolution 2231, which calls upon Iran not to undertake any activity related to ballistic missiles designed to be capable of delivering nuclear weapons, including launches using such ballistic missile technology. These are just the latest of a series of incidents in the past 6 months in which Houthi forces that Iran has trained and armed have struck Emirati and Saudi vessels and threatened United States and allied vessels transiting the Red Sea. In these and other similar activities, Iran continues to threaten U.S. friends and allies in the region. The Obama administration failed to respond adequately to Tehran's malign actions, including weapons transfers, support for terrorism, and other violations of international norms. The Trump administration condemns such actions by Iran that undermine security, prosperity, and stability throughout and beyond the Middle East, which places American lives at risk.
Flynn described as weak and ineffective agreements reached between Iran and the Obama administration and the United Nations emboldening Tehran. Tehran-based political analyst Mohammad Marandi said it would be difficult to imagine the U.S. could launch a military attack against Iran.
I find it very difficult to imagine that Trump would be able to launch military attacks on any major country or big country in the world because he has so many economic problems at home. The population in the United States is deeply divided. Countries that used to be considered as close allies of the United States are very angry at the new U.S. administration. So he would have a very difficult job gaining support either at home or abroad for any major military engagements.
Trump administration officials said they have a range of options, including economic sanctions and assistance to Iran's rivals, although one said he hopes Iran will heed his notice and change its behavior. Washington has called an emergency UN Security Council meeting to address the missile test, which the council referred to a committee on Iran. University of Pennsylvania scholar Ian Lustig tells VOA's Victor Beatty the U.S. must be careful in the way it deals with Iran's actions.
The Iranians are capable of hurting us a great deal in Iraq. We have 6,000 soldiers in Iraq. The majority of the population in Iraq is Shia and sympathetic in one way or another to Iran. There are very large and powerful militias in Iraq that are commanded by and trained by the Iranians. Those are some of the best fighting units that have had success against ISIS. So already after the ban on refugees and on immigrants from seven Muslim countries, including Iraq. There's an uproar in Iraq, including among those troops fighting in Mosul, to crush ISIS. Those troops were trained by us, are closely related to our soldiers, and the Iraqi parliament voted to punish the United States to retaliate by preventing Americans from coming to Iraq. I say all this because Iran can make things much worse for our soldiers in Iraq.
In a background briefing after the White House statement on Wednesday, three senior U.S. officials speaking on condition of anonymity said a range of options, including economic sanctions, was being considered in a broad review of U.S. posture toward Iran. They said they didn't want to be premature or rash or take action that would foreclose options or unnecessarily contribute to a negative response.
That's all very good to hear. Economic sanctions, yes, there are, American economic sanctions we could ratchet up above and beyond those that the Congress is already enforcing. But as long as the rest of the world is not joining with us in those sanctions, it's really not going to hurt Iran that much.
President Trump spoke with the Saudi ruler, King Salman, on Sunday in a conversation described by the White House as the two agreeing on the importance of enforcing the nuclear deal with Iran and addressing Iran's destabilizing regional activities.
Well, the Saudis are the people, along with the Israelis, that are most concerned about the Iranians, and they're going to welcome a firmer American posture, or one that backs them up. One of the things that was happening under the President Obama's administration was there were so many civilian casualties in Yemen as a result of the Saudi bombing there that the United States was cutting back its aid to Saudi Arabia, its arms aid, and I think this conversation is a way for the Saudis to try to get the Americans back on board with whatever they do in Yemen.
In a tweet, President Trump said Iran is taking more and more of Iraq. Meantime, the German newspaper Die Welt, citing unnamed intelligence sources, said Tehran had tested a cruise missile capable of carrying nuclear weapons. An executive order signed by Mr. Trump restricting travel to the U.S. was issued, he says, in order to protect Americans and the border, but some are protesting that order. And how might the Islamic State group, some are asking, use the ban? VOA's Steve Miller reports.
Last week, President Donald Trump signed an executive order he says will protect America and its borders. It's an action that some Americans support, but has also brought thousands out in protest, a rebuke from President Obama, and the termination of Acting Attorney General Sally Yates, who said her office wouldn't defend the restrictions placed on seven predominantly Muslim nations. Site Intelligence Group wrote that jihadists commented on President Donald Trump's order, stating that it revealed America's hatred towards Muslims. The White House says the restrictions are about safety, but will the Islamic State group use it for recruitment? Speaking on Skype, RAND Corporation's senior political scientist, Jonah Blank.
ISIL, otherwise known as ISIS, Daesh, some call it the Islamic State, has already been using this, and its adherents have been using this in a variety of social media.
Can it work? Scott Stewart, VP of Tactical Analysis from the Texas-based think tank Stratfor, says on Skype.
If we really look at what the U.S. has been doing, over the last, 15 years now, as far as being engaged in combat, I really don't think that in the long run, this is going to be that much of an effective thing.
The Islamic State group has tried expanding into Asia, specifically Indonesia, the world's most populous Muslim nation, as well as the southern Philippines. On Skype, the director for the Asia Maritime Transparency Initiative at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, Greg Poling, says,
The thing that IS has that previous terrorist organizations didn't is social media and YouTube and the ability to help kind of self-radicalize folks. And we've seen that in a number of small-scale terrorist attacks over the last couple of years in those countries. This could potentially be a little more fuel thrown on that fire.
Poling says nations are concerned about self-radicalization, but also about what happens if IS is defeated and all the fighters return home. And yet,
at the end of the day, the more people from another country that come to the U.S., experience U.S. culture, make friends and people-to-people connections here, the better off we are. Even if the world's most populous Muslim nations like Indonesia and Pakistan aren't included in any ban, if they perceive that they're not welcome and therefore start sending students to the U.K. or Australia instead, that's bad for the U.S.
For VOA News in Washington, I'm Steve Miller.
And still ahead on the program, what's trending on social media, including the buzz about the U.S. political scene. This is VOA.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and The Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. With the support of Libya's UN-backed leader Fayez al-Sarraj and Brussels European Council President Donald Tusk said he would propose extra and operational measures to stop the migrant route from Libya to Italy at the meeting of the European Union leaders in Malta later today. Josephine McKenna is following the developments of the meeting and spoke with VOA's Kim Lewis about what the new measures would mean for refugees and migrants who want to head to Europe through Libya.
Libya's UN-backed leader, Fayez al-Sarraj, was in Brussels yesterday for talks with the EU, and the president of the European Council, Donald Tusk, said he is committed to closing the migration route between Libya and Italy. After those talks, he said he was going to propose concrete operational measures to close the migrant route at a meeting of EU leaders in Malta, which takes place on Friday. He said he's had talks with the Italian Prime Minister, Paolo Gentiloni, and it seems that they want to work together to really reduce the number of migrants making that journey across the Mediterranean. Mr. Tusk said that the flow was not sustainable either for the EU or for Libya, and the traffickers, the people traffickers, were undermining the authority of the Libyan state for their own personal profit.
How do they hope to achieve doing this?
Well, it seems like a tall order at the moment, but the 28 heads of state, the EU government leaders, will be meeting to discuss migration in Malta on Friday, and they're expected to particularly focus on the central Mediterranean route and Libya, looking at measures to support the government, to increase security, trying to find ways to cut that flow. It seems like a tall order, but just this week we saw the Italian government announce €200 million to invest in countries including in Niger and Libya to try and support the security services and to cut the numbers of people who are trying to make that journey across the Mediterranean.
So does that actually mean that refugees and migrants will not be able to leave to go into Europe or Italy?
It seems a little bit unclear at the moment, but there's talk of training for security services, more training for the Coast Guard in Libya, trying to break the business model of smugglers. That sounds a bit vague at the moment, but they really need to come up with more specific proposals if they're really going to reduce the numbers of people making this journey. 180,000 people have arrived in Italy last year, and there's no sign of that number slowing down at this point. So it seems that Italy, at least, wants to invest more money in the home countries to try and support the economies and give people a reason to stay, while also trying to support the security services and coastal patrols off the coast of Libya.
Also, there was a survey that was conducted in Italy regarding female migrants that found that many of them were victims of genital mutilation. Can you tell me more about that survey?
That seems quite an unusual survey. It's a very rare thing for that to be done in Italy. This was a survey conducted by a Milan university, the Università degli Studi, and they estimate between 46,000 and 57,000 female migrants may be victims of genital mutilation. The survey estimates around 60% of those would be coming from Nigeria and Egypt, but women from Somalia and Burkina Faso were also cited as victims in this particular survey.
What do they intend on doing at this point?
The results of the survey were presented at a meeting organized by something called the Action Aid Organization in conjunction with the City of Milan ahead of the World Day Against Female Genital Mutilation, which is due to take place on February the 6th. So at this point, the survey is trying to highlight the issue, the concern about women's safety, women's health, and try and promote this in accordance with international publicity that we hope we're going to see next week with the world recognition of that day.
Reporter Josephine McKenna speaking with Kim Lewis, host of the VOA program, Africa News Tonight. In the northern Indian state of Haryana, an increasing number of young women are taking to wrestling, a sport that's not been traditionally open to them in India's patriarchal society. We get the story now from Anjana Pasricha.
On a chilly winter morning, a group of young girls and women do warm-up exercises ahead of a grueling three-hour training session at the Choturam Stadium in Rohtak town in India's northern Haryana state. 12-year-old Meenakshi begins practice at 6 a.m. before she heads to school. Like the other women and girls, her inspiration is female wrestler Sakshi Malik, who trained at this stadium and shot to national fame after bagging a bronze medal at the 2016 Olympic Games.
Only 9 seconds, she made her life wonderful, completed.
Wrestling for women was frowned upon in the conservative state that is known for its male-dominated village councils and sex-selective abortions. But a slow change began after two women made their mark as world-class wrestlers at the 2010 Commonwealth Games. When Coach Mandeep came to the stadium 6 years ago, only a handful of girls learned wrestling. Now he is inundated with questions as scores of parents have overcome traditional taboos and wrestling has become a rage.
Earlier, parents stopped the girls and kept them at home because that was the social norm. Now parents are supporting them and fulfilling their ambitions. It's a huge social change.
Many of them, like 17-year-old Tina Malik, who has bagged a national medal, have come from villages where women are often covered from head to toe and where girls could not mix with boys.
Earlier, even for practice, we could not wear clothes like this. Now we can wear this sports gear. No one objects.
It is not just the attire that is liberating. Dreams are getting fired as they emerge from the shadows of tradition to pack power and punch in a bout of wrestling. Pinky Malik, the daughter of a farmer, has already won a gold medal at the 2016 Commonwealth Championship and is determined to emerge on top in the next Olympics. But medals are not the only achievement.
Women should get respect. That's the biggest issue, respect. Wrestling will improve things for us.
As their success changes traditional attitudes, wrestling has become the unlikely path helping Haryana's young girls and women break barriers and write their own future. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, Rohtak, Haryana.
It is time now to find out what's trending on social media. And here with all the latest, G. Abby Lee. Hey, G., what's happening?
Hi, Steve. I talked about Beyoncé's pregnancy announcement with Lori yesterday, and it looks like the online community is not ready to turn their attention elsewhere anytime soon. More photos from Beyoncé's pregnancy photo shoot are posted online, and people are calling them iconic. Some of the photos are taken underwater.
I mean, you have to be amazed by her Instagram following and all the people commenting on her having twins. Just amazing. Tell me what else G is out there trending.
Two luxury brands saw major personnel shakeup, and that's affecting their stock prices. American fashion house Ralph Lauren shares are down after CEO Stefan Larsson said he's leaving the company in May. French designer brand Givenchy's creative director, Ricardo Tisci, is also leaving the company after 12 years there. Twitter users are sharing his most memorable fashion moments, including celebrity Kim Kardashian's outfits.
Yeah, I gotcha. Anything trending on the political front?
There always is, and especially so these days. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi used the words white supremacists to describe President Trump's chief strategist, Steve Bannon. She was speaking during a presser. The discussion on Twitter is on whether the label is truthful. Unrelated news, actor Matthew McConaughey also spoke on the political climate. During an interview with BBC, the American actor said it's time for Hollywood to embrace President Trump. Many people are sharing the interview on Twitter because most of his fellow Hollywood actors have voiced support for Hillary Clinton. Steve?
Many thanks to you, G. International Edition's G. Abby Lee. By the way, you can find G on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. I'm there as well at VOA Norman, and our program, International Edition, can be found on Twitter at VOA_IE. This is VOA.
This is BizBeat.
Velvet is the comeback trend of the season.
Allison Levine is the owner of Allison Levine Design, a celebrity fashion expert and stylist.
Velvet is everything, and it is in full force.
Levine says velvet has moved into everyday casual wear for men and women and is showing up in furniture and home decor. This Sausalito silver couch made of velvet is selling for $2,700. Why the sudden interest? Olga Rakduni, Daroque owner and interior designer.
Because it is associated with luxury. It is associated with nobility and with wealth. And people just love it.
How about a pair of Gucci slippers for $850? In the past 2 years, velvet sales have shot up 200% online. And last year, Rakduni's company sold 80% more velvet furniture and draperies than in the past 10 years. For VOA's BizBeat, I'm Philip Alexio.
This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us today. Guess what? It's time now for a little something from our music department.
I hear the neon lights up bright on Broadway. I hear the dreams come true there every day.
The Brill Building is on Broadway. It's been home to dozens of music companies where songwriters such as Barry Mann and Cynthia Weil wrote hits like On Broadway for the R&B girls group The Cookies. The song was later covered by greats such as George Benson, for whom it was a chart topper. And then there was this super hit. Little Eva singing The Locomotion, written by the husband and wife team of Jerry Goffin and Carol King. They wrote the song in their offices at the Brill Building. Locomotion was not only a big hit for Little Eva, Grand Funk Railroad, and Kylie Minogue also went to the top of the charts with the song in the 1970s and 80s. And guess who this is?
I thought love was only true in fairy tales. And for someone else, but not for me. Our love was out to get me. Now that's the way it seemed. Disappointment haunted all my dreams. Then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer.
That's the Monkee singing Neil Diamond's I'm a Believer, written at the Brill Building early on in Diamond's career.
I'm in love. I'm a believer. I couldn't leave her if I tried.
remember this song, a singles hit, and an Academy Award winner for the film Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Raindrops are falling on my head, and just like the guy whose feet are too big for his bed, nothing seems to fit. Those raindrops are falling on my head, they keep falling. So I just did need some talking to the sun.
Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head was written by Burt Bacharach and Hal David at the Brill Building and sung by B.J. Thomas.
Those raindrops are falling on my head, they keep falling. But there's one thing I know, the blues they send to meet me.
The so-called Brill Building sound includes the mainstream of American popular songs from gospel to rhythm and blues, pop, country, and rock and roll. The Brill Building still stands in the heart of New York's Theater District, where it was built in 1931.
But that doesn't mean my eyes will soon be turning red. Crying's not for me, 'cause I'm never gonna stop the rain by complaining, because I'm free. Nothing's worrying me.
Yes, indeedy. Super hit for B.J. Thomas, not to mention Burt Bacharach, Hal David. Big days at the Brill Building. Hey, listen, everyone, thanks for joining us here on the Voice of America for International Edition. Always good to have you with us. A reminder, the latest world news is straight ahead. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Nelson Lopes, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. Listen, have a great Friday.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
1 week after his inauguration, President Donald Trump welcomed his first foreign leader to the White House, Britain's Prime Minister Theresa May. At a press briefing, both leaders emphasized the two countries' special relationship. President Trump called it a deep bond with military, financial, cultural, and political dimensions. He said, "Together, America and the United Kingdom are a beacon for prosperity and the rule of law. Our relationship has never been stronger. Both America and Britain understand that governments must be responsible to everyday working people, that governments must represent their own citizens." Prime Minister May sounded a similar note, saying she and President Trump share the approach of putting the interests of ordinary people up there center stage. She also invoked the special relationship, noting that both leaders are ambitious to build on this relationship in order to grow our respective economies. She said Britain and the United States are discussing how to lay the groundwork for a UK-US trade agreement and identified the practical steps we can take now in order to enable companies in both countries to trade and do business with one another more easily. Such a trade deal in the aftermath of the Brexit vote, Prime Minister May said, will cement the crucial relationship that exists between us, particularly as the UK leaves the European Union and reaches out to the world. Prime Minister May spoke of other areas of agreement, the need to redouble efforts to defeat ISIS and the ideology of Islamist extremism, the importance of NATO and the necessity of seeing that NATO is equipped to fight terrorism and cyber warfare, as well as conventional forms of war. She promised to continue her efforts to encourage fellow European leaders to deliver on their commitments to spend 2% of the GDP on defense, so that the burden is more fairly shared and we are properly equipped to face our shared challenges together. President Trump said to Prime Minister May, "We look forward to working closely with you as we strengthen our mutual ties in commerce, business, and foreign affairs. Great days lie ahead for our two peoples and our two countries."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
for